So we've got Riley versus Tesla. Once the courtroom settles, we can start that one. All right, Mr. Krieger.
Good morning. Excuse me. Good morning. May it please the court. Thomas Krieger on behalf of James Riley, personal representative of the estate of Barrett Riley. 18-year-old Barrett Riley died in a tragic car crash where he sustained fatal thermal injuries. He burned to death in a battery electric vehicle in his 2014 Tesla Model S. On behalf of his son's estate, Mr. Riley brought a products claim alleging that the battery pack was defective because Tesla failed to use fire retardant intumescent material in the battery pack. In my time this morning, I would like to address the district court's order on summary judgment expressed in its order on reconsideration, which granted summary judgment in Tesla's favor on this claim based on a proximate cause analysis. There are, in our view, two problems with the district court's finding that there was insufficient evidence that the absence of intumescent material caused the fire. First, the question on causation is not whether the lack of intumescent material caused the fire. It's whether the lack of intumescent material made the fire worse.
I thought it resulted. If you read Gooding and the cases that set out causation in Florida, it's the but for resulted in injury. But for the design defect, it wouldn't have resulted in that injury. Am I wrong on that?
Well, I think that's what gets to the crux of our issue is that it really shouldn't be the but for test expressed in Gooding.
Okay, so I've dug into this a lot, and I just want you to correct any misimpression I have. It seems to me that if you read Florida law, what Florida law is saying is that where you get the substantial factor test, where you get away from Gooding, is where there is multiple independent causes that can't say but for. In other words, two things happen simultaneously that one cannot say but for that the other, it would have resulted because you don't know. And in that independent cause situation, Florida has, in that unique situation, watered down the issue. But if it's multiple dependent causes that you don't water it down, you still apply the Gooding but-for test. Do I have that wrong?
I don't think you have it wrong at all in principle. But okay. I do think we have to drill down on the, well, really, if you take it back even a step further, you have the cause in fact components.
I'm actually really talking about cause in fact.
Right. So if we drill down to the cause in fact, and it's also important to understand what the damages or the injury is here. The injuries are fatal burns from a fire.
Right.
So then you drill down to the next level and look at the fire. And the fire here, you can't really say it's just one fire, because when you drill down even further and you look at what causes these types of fires in electric battery packs, it's when individual cells, and there are 7,104 in this particular battery pack, it's when they go into something called thermal runaway, kind of like a...
Here's what I understand it to be. I've tried to read the record. I obviously don't know the level you folks at the tables do. But here's what I understand to happen. There doesn't seem to be a dispute that there was thermal runaway caused by the multiple collisions. And your expert, Dr. White, seems to admit that. At least, but that seems to be what it is. What he says is that what can happen as a result of thermal runaway is propagation, which spreads from cell to cell to cell. And it's the intumescent material that would have stopped the propagation that was there. But everyone agrees that at least there was some thermal runaway in some portion because of the collision. It seems to be a decent amount. And that the fire started because of that. Do I have anything wrong there?
I would say that is all correct, that yes, there were some individual battery cells that went into thermal runaway
right.
because of the impacts of the crash.
Right, and that's what started the fire?
And that's what started those, that's what caused those individual cells.
Okay. Can you show me anywhere in Dr. White's testimony or anywhere, if we're in the but-for world, and I think we've gotten there, that this isn't a multiple independent cause situation, we're in a dependent cause situation, anywhere that but for the propagation, the death would not have resulted? Where's the best evidence of that?
Well, I guess the issue I would take with that is I'm not sure that we are outside of the but-for world. In other words, I still think...
I agree, we are in the but-for world, but that's I just asked the but-for question.
Well, what I mean to say is that I don't think we can disregard the substantial factor test for causation.
I just don't... I'm looking at Stahl, which is one of many cases that deal with this issue. Stahl went through Prosser's examples of dependent and independent causes. And here's one of the examples that Prosser used that Stahl quotes for dependent as opposed to independent for when you water down Gooding. Quote, the defendant sets a fire, which merges with the fire from some other source. The combined fires burn the plaintiff's property, but either one would have done it alone. That is where you have the situation. That's where you don't use that's where Gooding still applies in that situation. That's not an independent cause situation. Here, we seem to have exactly that. There's a fire, and then there's more fire, and the defendants died by fire. But I don't see where, and I'd like to hear your best case in Florida for what that is, for why that wouldn't be the but-for standard and would require a court to then determine what the but-for cause is of the intumescent blanket that caused the injury here.
Well, I think when you drill down on that test, and yes, that's from section 41, page 239 of the Handbook of the Law of Torts, which Stahl cites. But the issue there, when it says when there's a fire from some other source, I mean, here the issue is that there were a number of cells that did not go into thermal runaway, that did not catch fire because of any impacts of the crash. The only reason that those cells, those individual battery cells, went into thermal runaway is because, according to Dr. White, there wasn't intumescent material which would have swallowed up those initial cells from the impact that ignited, that would have quenched the fire. And that, in turn, allowed thermal runaway propagation to occur.
I think all of that is established by Dr. White's testimony. And I think you can even say that that wouldn't have happened if the intumescent blanket probably wouldn't have happened if the intumescent material was there. I think we've gotten that far. But it seems to me that under Florida law, you have to get one step further and to say that if that had happened, the death would not have resulted here, either because the fire wouldn't have been nearly as heavy, or because that portion of the fire or portion of the battery dealt with a portion of the car he was sitting in. There seems to be a link that's missing here. And I think that's what the district court was struggling with, and that's what I'm struggling with right now.
I think that's because in some of the earlier cases that look at the substantial factor of causation, they have an analysis where they say essentially the ultimate harm or damage that occurred could have been caused by A or it could have been caused by B, and we can't say which one it was. And therefore, we're going to use the substantial factor test of causation. Over time, I think that test has been liberalized in the case law. And that hard distinction or that notion that either one of the causes standing alone would have caused the ultimate injury has merged into a standard which sort of recognizes that it can be deemed a cause in fact under the substantial factor test if the defendant's conduct had more than a remote or trivial impact on the circumstances leading to the injury.
And what's the best case you have for that proposition?
The best case is the AstraZeneca versus Ginn case, actually at the district court level.
Not I'm talking about Florida. What's your best Florida level case?
So the best Florida, well, I still think that even if you go through Stahl, I still think you arrive at that analysis.
Okay. Thank you.
So it's our position that had the district court used the substantial factor test of causation, which was specifically pled in our complaint. At paragraph 59 on the strict liability claim, we allege that this defect was a substantial factor in bringing about the fire. Had the district court used that test, and even if the district court only looked at what it had deemed the admissible opinion testimony of Dr. White, in other words, putting aside any questions on Daubert about the thickness or thinness of the can cell walls, putting aside her determinations about the appropriateness of the declarations, that if you use the substantial factor test, whether the defendant's conduct was a substantial factor in bringing about the ultimate harm, that there would have been a genuine issue of material facts, which would have entitled the plaintiff to have brought the product's liability claim alongside the negligence claim for the removal of the speed limiter at trial. One of the notions that my friend raises with respect to thermal propagation is that it didn't happen. And I think it's important to look at the record in terms of whether that is in and of itself a disputed issue of fact, given its predicate importance. And I think there's plenty of testimony from Dr. White in his deposition.
What about the argument? I agree with you on that. I don't think, if you take Dr. White's testimony, I think we have to, because it wasn't excluded under Daubert. There clearly was evidence of propagation, and that probably caused some part of the fire, or would have stopped that propagation from happening if they had the intumescent material. They raised the issue about the amount of damages and the distribution of fault, and how that would have played out in a new trial. In other words, why would we send this back if we know what the total amount of damage is, and we also know that they've assessed fault in this particular way based on the unique facts of this very tragic case? Why would that change if we happen to know that a blanket being there would have had less fire than otherwise would have happened?
Well, I think that raises the question of what this could possibly look like on remand were the court to agree with our position. And I know my time is running short, and I'll address this more in rebuttal. I think the first question is you go to Rule 59 of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, which allows for partial trials. It allows, in theory, for a new trial to happen on just the issue of the product's liability claim. But as I'll explain in more detail in rebuttal, I believe at the end of the day, the issues on apportionment of fault and on the types of damages that could be compensated in a product's liability claim make it such that the issues are so interwoven and interrelated that under the test for partial trials established by the Supreme Court all the way back in 1931, you can't say that you could fairly have a trial on just the product's liability claim.
Okay, Mr. Krager, you've saved 3 minutes. Let's hear from Ms. Lemish. Good morning.
May it please the court.
Will you pull the mic down, please?
Sure. May it please the court. Wendy Lemish and Alina Rodriguez here on behalf of Tesla. I think, Your Honor, Judge Luck, you described exactly what this case is about. There's no claim that the battery was defective because it caught fire in this crash at over 115 miles an hour. That's not the issue. The issue is whether plaintiff can demonstrate that but for the lack of intumescent material, which plaintiff says would have prevented propagation, whether but for that, there wouldn't have been a fire or a worse fire. I'm not sure how they explain that.
If they're two separate and independent bases in order for there to be a fire, here collision and then the starting of one fire that clearly led to another, how is that not two independent causes which clearly led to death, and we know the death was by thermal injury?
Well, we do know the death was by thermal injury. The fire, both of them are the fire. But the fire happens, and the plaintiff is saying that the thermal propagation made it worse, apparently. But they don't have that evidence. They can't show that but for the thermal propagation, that the result wouldn't be the same.
Well, I guess, but under Florida law, it seems that doesn't have to if they're in multiple independent causes.
Well,
so let me ask you this. If I'm standing in the middle of two pieces of dynamite with long strings, and one on my left side, one on my right side, and two people independently come up and light those pieces of dynamite, and they go off around the same time, we can't say which one killed me, right? That's what this is about. So what we do is we say, was a substantial factor in death? We sort of water down the causation standard. And my question to you is, Why is this not similar to that situation where you have the crash, which started a fire in one portion, and then you have, because the fire was there, other firecrackers went off, is the only way I could sort of think about this, in the battery that then, you know, also caused fire, which led to death?
Let me start by saying, of course, I'm not agreeing there was the thermal propagation, I think the expert just said. But for purposes of your question, I think the issue here is you have a fire, and the fire causes the death. And the only question is, did adding something else to that contribute? I would say that just as the court found in Gwynn, this court need not even address that question, because whether it's substantial factor, whether it's but-for. And I believe it's but-for, and I think Your Honor clearly explained that earlier. But even if you want to go to the substantial factor, what the Gwynn court said, in Gwynn, as you all may be familiar, the Gwynn case was a drug that supposedly caused weight gain and diabetes. And there were all kinds of other risk factors for the weight gain and diabetes. And what the court ultimately said, they excluded the expert's opinion, but then they said, even if we consider everything the expert said, he can't say that it was the weight gain, that it was all these other risk factors, or it was the drug. So he hasn't proven it was a substantial factor. So I would say that even if you want to avoid the issue of whether it's but-for causation or whether it's a substantial factor, you get to the same result. Because
here's the problem with that, and that is an appealing argument if we agreed with it. But the syllogism seems to be he dies by fire. Intumescent material would have prevented the spread of the fire here. And so if it would have prevented the spread of the fire and he died by that same fire, whatever the contribution was, whether it was substantial or not, and the testimony is that if this blanket had been in there, that propagation wouldn't have happened, I have trouble seeing how it's like the situation where there's all these other independent causes that could have happened. It's all the same thing. It's the same fire.
Well, I think part of that is the premise that it did cause it in the first instance. And part of that is there's testimony that intumescent, according to the plaintiff, that intumescent material would have prevented the propagation. But actually, when you look at what the expert's saying on that, he really can't. He's saying it wouldn't happen in the abstract. He's not offering the opinion in this case. What's really important, I think, here is...
When you say in this case, about
this particular fire.
Crash.
What's really important here is the plaintiff's expert never understood, explained this accident, this crash, the forces in this crash. But he acknowledges that there's going to be a fire either way. So it was their burden to show that... You know, you get a fire from crush. He can't show that you'd get the fire from something else. So even if you go but for, you go substantial factor, it still has to be a cause. And they haven't met that first level of demonstrating it's a cause. They can't say that the lack of intumescent material, which allegedly led to a propagation, which again, we don't believe the record supports that, caused the fire that resulted in the death. And I would also point out that even if you get by a 702 challenge, as Gwynn points out, it still can't be speculative testimony. And that's all we have is speculative. He uses a lot of might have, would have, my guess is.
He says in the relevant portion that we've been talking about, he says probably, and probably is probably enough to get there. So I'm not sure that's right. But you're also, remember, we have to add in not just his testimony, but something that he relies on and that's in the record, I believe, which is the patent for the blanket or for the material itself. Which does indicate that propagation is a problem, which is why we're creating this thing and they're using it, in fact, in later models.
Well, I would take issue with the fact of whether or not the patent itself demonstrates there was a material that would have had an impact here. The patent says, here's some material that deals with propagation. That says nothing about what happens in this accident. And I think that's the part that's always been missing here. That's what I think the trial judge was struggling with is, we're not talking about the abstract. I understand fireproofing is supposed to help in a house fire, but you still have house fires. So the answer can't be just because you have a patent, and again, we don't agree
Didn't
that
Dr.
patent.
Dr. White testify that on his view, and again, whether it should have been admitted under 702, put that aside for the moment, but in his view, he agreed that some of the cells had run away from the crash.
Absolutely.
But that the other ones, because, I mean, you see them. You could see it if you see the picture. I mean, they're the individual batteries sort of are burned out. Some of those, he says, were from crash, but the other ones were from propagation, right?
Well, what he actually says, he's asked the question about how do you distinguish, and I'm not an expert. I can't look at the pictures and tell you. He's asked how he distinguishes, and he said, it's my opinion. Others can disagree with me, but that's my opinion.
Whether that should be admitted or not, we're putting aside.
Well, but let's assume it is admitted. Right. It still can't be speculative, and that's exactly what Gwynne talks about, is you can't, even if you allow testimony, it can't be speculative testimony, and that's all he was saying was, I think that's what, this is my opinion, I don't have a basis for it. You can't tell when you look at the photographs. And here's a really important part about it. He said, if you just showed me some testing that said there was thermal, that there was no thermal propagation when you strike these cells, if you showed me that, then it's pretty unlikely it didn't happen. Well, guess what? That evidence is in the record. It's at volume 3113 in the record. And what happened? The expert said, I wasn't given that. I didn't see it. So basically, he said, if you show me the evidence, then I don't even think there's thermal propagation. And he wasn't shown that evidence. And that's why I go back to that stage, because I do think it's important.
I want to interrupt, because is that a question for summary judgment, or is that an argument for exclusion under Rule 702 of his testimony because it's too speculative or uncertain?
I think as Gwynne points out, you always get to the point. First, you look at it as 702, but then you always ask the question, even if you accept the words that the expert said. So now you have to accept his words. You still decide whether it's speculative. And that's what Gwynne said. They excluded the expert, but then they said, we're going to look at these words that he said anyway. And when you look at these words,
you have to still say, is it enough to create a genuine issue?
Right. You still have to get to that hurdle. Sometimes that seems a little odd, but when you look at it, and again, Gwynne says that the Pierre case also goes to this causation. And so I think what the plaintiff tries to do is say, I see some, what I think is thermal propagation, although it's just my opinion, and I think that it would have prevented propagation because there's a patent out there, but the patent doesn't say anything about what happens in a crash at 115 miles an hour that the expert admits he is not looking at. He says, I didn't consider impacts. I'm a battery guy. I'm not a vehicle guy. You can't possibly look at this case without considering how this crash happened. And at the end of the day, if you get fire from crush, he has to show that you also got fire from thermal propagation. It may sound like, well, of course that all fits together and there's more of it. But that's not the legal standard. The legal standard required this expert to come forward with some evidence. And from beginning to end, he didn't do that. And that's why the trial court ultimately, after she did find, okay, I'm going to say there's a jury issue on defects, she went back very carefully and looked at it and said, they just haven't proven that causal link. Really, for the description, Judge Luck, when you started, that you looked at, there's a gap there. And you can make it sound good by saying a fire is a fire is a fire, but that's not how the law operates. And they had a burden that they didn't meet. And so we would say that you don't need to go to deciding, I think it is but for, to be very clear. I think that's the correct analysis. But even if you do substantial factor, the Gwynne case is directly on point. And we would ask that the court affirm based on the Gwynne decision. If the court has any other questions, I'm happy to answer them.
We don't. Thank you.
Thank you.
3 minutes, Mr. Krager.
Thank you. The first thing I would like to address is an issue raised by my friend, whether the opinion is speculative regarding the existence of thermal runaway propagation. And what I would like to mention on that is there is evidence from which there would be a genuine issue of fact on that point. Dr. White testified at multiple points in his deposition that he saw visual evidence of runaway propagation, not only from cell to cell, but from module to module. So he saw it from the right front corner where the initial impact happened on the car, all the way back to modules extending towards the rear tire. Now, there were arguments made below that visual inspection is insufficient for that sort of an opinion, but I would note that Tesla's own expert also relied on his visual inspection in his report to say that there wasn't thermal runaway propagation.
What about the evidence that counsel says he didn't see?
I'm sorry.
She just mentioned a piece of evidence that he said he was not presented with.
He has no knowledge of the force of the crash, right?
That's correct.
The problem. And so the lack of intimacy material that might have prevented thermal propagation doesn't change the fact that with the force of the crash, there would have been a fire anyway, and he has no knowledge about the force of the crash. That looks to me like a big problem.
Well, it didn't render his admissible opinion infirm in the eyes of the district court, which Tesla hasn't appealed. So the law of the case is that the opinion that he did render on intumescent material remains. But with respect to the impact from the crashes, there is evidence from which an inference should be drawn in the plaintiff's favor, coming in large part from Tesla's patent, that it is known exactly what causes thermal runaway. It can be caused by a short circuit, it can be caused by physical abuse, or it can be caused by thermal runaway propagation from other cells, increased temperatures. And that is what the crux of the issue is, in our view, is that we have independent cells that went into thermal runaway because of the crash, and then we have a number of other cells that went into thermal runaway because of thermal runaway propagation, which could have been avoided with the use of intumescent material. So that's why, in our view, that is a substantial factor in bringing about the fire that was fatal. And on to Judge Luck's point on that, in terms of Florida law, I would simply direct the court, as we did in our papers, to the jury instruction in products liability cases, 403.12, which is clear in the comments that it's not setting forth any other additional standard, but is setting forth the basic test. And that test is simply that you look to see whether it was, in fact, contributed substantially to producing the ultimate harm, which in this case was Mr. Riley's death.
Okay. We have your case, Mr. Krager. That's the last of the week. We're adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.